Blog Talk Radio.
She's a very fine cow.
Welcome, everybody, to a special edition of Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics, and that clip you just heard was from the new film First Cow, directed by Kelly Reichardt, who, if you know her work, know that she loves telling stories about the Pacific Northwest, in particular Oregon, and First Cow is no different. It's based on the book The Half-Life. It stars John Magaro and newcomer Ryan Lee. It's set in the 19th century. It's basically a Western centered on two men who become fast friends. One, a wayward chef, frontier chef. The other is an enterprising Chinese expat. And they become fast friends while trying to start a business making oily cakes for the passengers, the travelers, in that location. Now to do that, it takes a little bit of skill, a little bit of stealth, and just a pinch of criminality. It's a movie that I really, really enjoyed, and I love Kelly Reichardt's films when they have this sort of thrust of action to them. Not all of her movies do, and I think that's being fair to say. But movies like this, and I would say Night Moves as well, which she did a few years ago, both of them have this sort of drive, this push for something, for some action that needs to take place. And I find that her movies are better when there is that. But I had a chance to talk with her about First Cow, and that was a real honor of mine to be able to sit down and talk to someone as amazing as her, a filmmaker I really, truly respect. And we talked about First Cow, how she decided on wanting to tell this particular story, the themes that resonate throughout all her movies resonate in First Cow, and we talked about that. And, of course, we talked about the cow as well, whose name is Bessie. So we got to do that. So here's my interview with Kelly Reichardt about First Cow. I hope you enjoy it.
It was interesting when I was sitting with a colleague of mine. We were watching it, and she leaned over to me, and I was just about to say the same thing to her. And I was like, it's totally about capitalism, and you're and it does seem to be like a kind of a theme running through it a little bit, yeah. You know, kind of the dangers of it in some ways. Was that something that was running through your mind when you were making
the
movie?
Yeah, the film's based, well, the script sprouted out of Jonathan Raymond's novel The Half-Life, which spans like four decades and two continents, and is a much larger story. Where the characters come from, and the themes of the book really are sort of the first seeds of capitalism versus the natural world, and you know, kind of look at if those two things can sort of coexist.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think that's in the film.
Yeah.
As well, yeah.
But one of the things that I really like about your movies and this one too, I don't know how people who aren't necessarily cinephiles perceive you, but I think a lot of them probably see your work as largely being centered on the female experience. But my first exposure to you was Old Joe,
right?
So,
yeah.
Which is and I felt a lot of similarities with this movie and that one in the friendship. Talk to me a little bit about that and why that's
right.
Something that's such interest to you is kind of the male bonding friendship.
Well, it's really just the particular characters, I guess, that I was drawn to. The Half-Life was the first thing I ever read of John's, and I after I read it, I wrote him and asked him if he had any short stories, you know, that I could afford to make. And it, you know, and he sent me Old Joy, and that was the first thing we did together. So, they deal with masculinity in much different ways, but they are, you know, in one case, in Old Joy, they're old friends coming back together, and in this case, they're strangers who sort of become friends over the course of the film. But it's all both in the Pacific Northwest, and but this is 1820s, yeah. And I think I was just really drawn to these two characters and their relationship. One, Cookie, who's like been you know, making his way across country with these trappers who are trapping the beaver, and King Lou, who's been living his whole life on ships, both of them kind of indentured servants, and but trying to get a toehold in a more stable existence that they would like to settle down in a way. And so, but they kind of need each other to make that happen.
Yeah.
And so it's a relationship of opportunity sort of at the beginning.
Yeah, I know. It's I love their relationship, actually. I didn't know much about the Half-Life when I went into it. I kind of, after I saw the movie, I kind of read a few pages just to kind of see, oh, okay, just kind of get it, see how much the movie reflects the book. But
it goes, like the book is, goes between 1980s and follows the, it's like all about the politics of these bones that are discovered, these skeletons, and they're thought to be indigenous bones. And so that runs throughout the film, and then you go back into the 1820s. But there's no cow in the book. you know, there's a whole different scheme going on in the book. And the King Lee character is really a combination of two characters in the book.
Mm.
So, yeah, so the cow was our way of figuring out how to make a screenplay out of the book and make it a smaller story.
It's a funny idea. I mean, it's a
what
was it? I mean, the cow seems like such a starring character in it.
Yeah,
she is.
Evie. Yeah.
Evie. Yeah. Or the cow's name is Evie.
Yes, right.
what was her? I mean, I don't know what it's like to work with a cow like that, where it's just kind of a centerpiece figure in a movie like that. But what?
Yeah.
What was that like?
She was as much as you can train a cow. You know, she got trained by. To be able to be on the ferry, you know, so that, because cows don't swim, and so that she could, I didn't really know that, but so that she'd be calm on the ferry. But then after that, you know, it's really sort of about training the crew for us to slow down and work at her pace and try not to be too loud and do all the things that are the opposite of natural filmmaking to sort of,
Was there a reason why you, chose to kind of focus on just this aspect of the book and not kind of follow it along the into like the contemporary stuff as well?
Well, I really like getting to the minutia of stuff, and so I mean, one quick answer is budget, but also like the idea of doing a film that expands for decades, you would really have to take the bigger strokes, concentrate on that, and I really like getting into the fine details of chores and day-to-day life. So my sort of dealing with time is usually like 2 weeks with these people. You know, it's a much smaller span of time so that it can get in a little deeper and have the space to sort of elaborate on those bits of time as opposed to just extracting everything out of a novel and you know, like you would have to hit all just to keep hitting the sort of plot points.
So one of the things I really like about your films is you really, or one of the things I really like about this movie is that they are the moments when they're just kind of in nature, you know, and just kind of walking and talking and just kind of being in there, and that's something that I think kind of is integral to a lot of your films, even a movie like Night Moves, where they're, you know, they're terrorists, you know, but nature plays a big aspect of it. Is that something that you you deliberately try to put a bit of an emphasis on in your movies, including this one?
Yeah, I mean they're extreme activists on behalf of nature, and some would argue that the terrorists are in a
of course
X on them.
Of
you
course,
know, all that kind of stuff. Just to say
of
that,
course.
Just because of the times we live in, you can't take anything for granted anymore.
Yes, of course.
but the natural world and how we operate in it, I think it, for the has really for some reason it was really gone back to my first film, River of Grass, that takes place in the Everglades, or what would have been the Everglades, I some of the first photographs that really influenced me were that school of photography of like Stephen Shore and Robert Adams, who shot sort of the footprint. It was more maybe 70s, but it was like the footprint of man in the landscape. And I I do a lot of driving cross country, and I do like the more than the bare wilderness where you drive by and you just see one house and they've got like a yard with 10 refrigerators out front and a dryer and 12 cars and this accumulation of stuff in the middle of nowhere, and you're like, wow, how did that happen? What's the story of all that stuff? I think that all the stories are kind of about this looking at the themes, I guess, are kind of common throughout, but just sort of like, what are we in society, who are we to each other, you know, like, what do we owe each other, and how much should we help each other, or is it each man for himself, and this look at the American mythology of, like, all you need is a good idea and some tenacity, and you too can, you know, work your way to the top, and that's all you need. And so in this case, you know, there's this whole thing of some guys stealing some milk, a basket of milk, to make their way, and that's like seen as the crime, as where there's this new industry that's beginning, the beaver trade, that's going to completely wipe out the indigenous people, wipe out the beaver, and you know, but that's all like in the realm of progress. And so I don't know, just sort of, it's really, we're focused on the friendship, but these other things are happening.
There's
on
a lot,
the
it's
side.
A,
yeah.
It's a lot going on, which one of these, one of the reasons I like it. Before I go, I want to talk about John McGarro and Orion Lee. I did not know Orion Lee before this movie.
Me neither.
talk to me a little bit about them. That friendship is so integral. Talk to me a little bit about their harmony working together. It just seemed fantastic.
It was a lot of I want to say there was a lot of good luck. There was also a lot of searching on the part of Gail Keller, the casting director. I mean, the search for Orion Lee was a big one. I was Skyping with people all over the world, and she was just endlessly on this search. And we found Orion in London, and he did several readings and sent them to me over a course of a couple months. And we just kept communicating, and each reading was different, but each one was interesting and really stuck with me. His presence came through. And McGarro was more in my orbit, and I just a beloved actor by everyone. The producer, you know, Scott Rudin, had worked with him a lot in various plays, and I knew of his work, and so he was... he was an easier find, and everyone was really, but we didn't really have them together until they came to Oregon, we immediately like pushed them through April Napier's costume machine, time machine, and then they got in their outfits, and then we sent them off with a survivalist into the, for like 4 days in the woods of learning how to cook and start fire without, McGarro had been practicing the cooking for a long time before he came, but starting a fire in the rain without matches and learning to do the traps and the sort of braiding and weaving that King Lu does and skin a squirrel, a roadkill squirrel that the survivalist keeps in his freezer for such emergencies. And also learning the language, which is that King Lu speaks. It's used the it's a trade jargon, the Chinook Wawa.
Oh,
and
wow.
So that's what Lily Gladstone and Gary Farmer, that's the language everybody's speaking, which I guess is a
love
kind
Lily
of combination.
Gladstone too.
Yeah.
She's, it's good to see her in this as well.
Yeah, she's wonderful. Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
All right, that was my interview with First Cow director Kelly Reichardt. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find my review of the film over at punchdrunkcritics.com right now. And this interview will be posted there as well very shortly. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.